Welcome to Back to Basics with Pastor Brian Broderson, an outreach ministry of Calvary Chapel, Costa Mesa, California. This program is designed to take you back to basic principles for living found in the Word of God.
So hey everybody, turn up your radio. Listen to your soul cry the question why song makes you wonderful. Something you never seen before.
Pastor Brian is currently teaching through the book of Genesis, and we'll be continuing today with part one of Cursed is the Earth. So let's turn in our Bibles to Genesis chapter 3, verse 16, as Pastor Brian takes us back to basics.
God is speaking at this point. He's already pronounced judgment upon the serpent from verse 14. But then in verse 16, to the woman he said, I will greatly multiply your sorrow and your conception. In pain you shall bring forth children. Your desires shall be for your husband, and he shall reign over you. Then to Adam he said, because you have heeded the voice of your wife and have eaten from the tree of which I commanded you, saying, you shall not eat of it, cursed is the ground for your sake. In toil you shall eat of it all the days of your life. Both thorns and thistles it shall bring forth for you. And you shall eat the herb of the field. In the sweat of your face you shall eat bread till you return to the ground. For out of it you were taken. For dust you are, and to dust you shall return. These verses describe the judgment that came upon man and all of creation as a result of the fall. As we've said before, the world we see today is not the world that God intended. It is a world that man ruined and continues to ruin through sin. It is a world that, as Paul described in Romans 8, it's a world that groans and travails, longing to be delivered from what Paul referred to as the bondage of corruption or the bondage of decay. Henry Morrison, commenting on just the overall subject of the curse, he said, it is universal experience that all things, living or non-living, eventually wear out, run down, grow old, decay, and pass into the dust. This condition is so universal that it was formalized into a fundamental scientific law, now called the second law of thermodynamics. This law states that all systems, if left to themselves, tend to become degraded or disordered. Physical systems, whether clocks or suns, eventually wear out. Organisms grow old and die. Instead of all things being organized into complex systems as they were in creation week, they are now being unmade, becoming disorganized and simple. Instead of life and growth, there is decay and death. Instead of evolution, there is disintegration. So in these verses is really the secret to all that is wrong in the world. And all that is wrong in the world is related back to this fundamental truth that man is a sinner and has brought God's curse upon the earth. So let's look at God's judgment and how God's judgment affected both man and the rest of the created order. So God, having passed from dealing with the serpent, and we looked at that fairly extensively, he comes now to the woman. And he says to the woman, I will greatly multiply your sorrow, and probably a better translation is your travail rather than your conception. I will greatly multiply your sorrow and your travail. Now, it really is difficult for women living in lands like our land that has been influenced greatly by the gospel of Jesus Christ. It's difficult to realize the miseries that women suffer in pagan lands. The lot or the plight of women in lands outside of those lands that have been influenced by the gospel really fare little better than cattle. A good illustration of the suffering and the oppression of women, of course, is seen in the Islamic world. One of the leading Saudi clerics declared that women are not only to be veiled, but they should only be allowed to have one eye showing to prevent seduction. So, you know, this is the plight of women in Islamic, fundamentalist Islamic countries today. And you could go across the board and look at the various nations where different types of religious systems are intact, whether it be Hinduism or Buddhism or whatever else you want to find. And you will see that the plight of women is considerably different than it is for women in the Western world. And the Western world, of course, has the difference because of the impact of Christianity in the West. But this is what God declared, that there would be a multiplying of sorrow and travail for the woman. And then he said, in pain you shall bring forth children. Now, of course, Eve had not yet conceived a child. Cain was not born until after the fall. But God declares that childbearing is going to be a painful experience. It seems to be that all other creatures bear their young relatively painlessly. But interestingly, not with women. The tremendous amount of suffering that women experience in childbirth is again directly related back to sin and back to the curse. And in some sense, it's to be a reminder to us. You know, God has left us many things that are reminders. We tend to, as human beings, I think we tend to try to erase as much of that as we can and get as far away from those kinds of things as we can possibly get. But the Lord has those ways of reminding us about these kinds of things. And so travail and pain in childbirth. But then he goes on to say this, your desire shall be toward your husband, and he shall rule over you. Now, there have been many different opinions on just what God meant by this. I read an excerpt from a theological journal, and the article on this particular passage happened to be written by a woman. And I think she really got close to what it is that God is declaring here. And this is what she said. I want to quote from that article. The woman has the same sort of desire for her husband that sin has for Cain. Now, as we go into chapter 4, verse 7, God is going to be speaking to Cain. And of course, this is later in the history, but we're all aware that that did happen. So God is speaking to Cain. And he says that sin is crouching at the door, and sin's desire is to overcome you, but you should overcome it. Now, the same Hebrew wording is found in both places, so the woman sees a parallel. And she says, the woman, Eve, and all other women, have the same sort of desire for their husband that sin has for Cain, a desire to possess or control him. This desire disputes the headship of the husband. As the Lord tells Cain what he should do, which is master or rule sin, the Lord also states what the husband should do, and that is rule over his wife. The words of the Lord in Genesis 3:16, as in the case of the battle between sin and Cain, do not determine the victor of the conflict between the husband and the wife. These words mark the beginning of the battle of the sexes. As a result of the fall, man no longer rules easily. He must fight for his headship. Now remember, a woman is saying this. Sin has corrupted both the willing submission of the wife and the loving headship of the husband. The woman's desire is to control her husband, to usurp his divinely appointed headship, and he must master her if he can. So the rule of love founded in paradise, the original plan, the rule of love founded in paradise is replaced by struggle, tyranny, and domination. Now, of course, this is all sorted out as husbands follow the biblical instruction, husbands loving their wives as Christ loved the church. We talked in depth about that. Wives following the biblical instruction to submit to their husbands as unto the Lord. That battle between the sexes is dealt with and sorted out as we submit our lives mutually to the Lordship of Christ. But outside of Jesus Christ, this is the conflict that goes on in the world to the present hour. It is a battle of the sexes. And as she states here, the woman's desire is to control her husband. Now, I experience that every single time I get in the car and drive anywhere with my wife sitting beside me in the driver's seat. She cannot help but try to control my every move. You know, get in that lane. Stop. Turn here. Don't go that way. Where are you going? You know, it drives me crazy. But it's just what it says right here. Trying to usurp authority. So, let's move on to God's dealing with the man. To the man, God now speaking to Adam, verse 17. Then to Adam he said, because you have heeded the voice of your wife and have eaten from the tree of which I commanded you, saying you shall not eat of it, cursed is the ground for your sake. In toil you shall eat of it all the days of your life. So this is where God pronounces a curse. Cursed is the ground, cursed is the earth. And really, we know that the curse has extended all the way out into the farthest reaches of the material universe. For Paul tells us, as we referred to earlier, that all of creation groans and travails. So not just earth or plant life or animal life or even human life, but he says all of creation. Extending out. And of course, that second law of thermodynamics, where we see everything in the process of entropy, everything is slowly but surely disintegrating, they see that out in the farthest reaches of the universe as well. But cursed is the ground or the earth in toil. So originally, God placed Adam in the garden to tend to the garden, but now the earth is not going to easily yield fruit as it would have naturally done before. And so man is going to be consigned really to hard labor all of his life. He's going to have to toil. He's going to have to work hard in order for the ground to produce what it previously would have just almost naturally produced. And then he says thorns and thistles are going to spring forth. Now, the question arises, some have wondered, well, you know, what happened at this time? Did God create thorns and thistles? What about the animals that were originally herbivores but yet became carnivorous? What about the animals who appear through their fangs and their claws and things, they appear to have been made to be carnivores? So, you know, what has happened there? Did God create the thorns and the thistles? Did God do something fresh with the animals that caused a change in their structure to some degree? And those who are scientifically oriented and have thought about these things have concluded that it was probably more of a, God allowed a mutation process to begin. And mutations are, generally speaking, always negative. And so through this mutation of the various plants, they started to bring forth thorns and thistles and weeds and poisonous kinds of things that were not originally there, but because of a corruption through the mutation in the DNA, now they have become harmful instead of helpful. And so perhaps with the animals too, perhaps there was something in their system that was then, as the deterioration process began, that triggered this alteration and ultimately produced these different kinds of features and characteristics that lent themselves more to the creatures becoming carnivorous. Might be the case. We don't really know. But those kinds of things, wherever we find death, wherever we find disintegration, decay, wherever we find it, this is what we know. We know that it's all connected back to this event. So, you know, the mechanics of it are just exactly how it all worked itself into the present state. Nobody really knows but God. But it did. And the culmination of everything is found here in verse 19. In the sweat of your face you shall eat bread till you return to the ground, for out of it you were taken, for dust you are, and to dust you shall return. The final stage in the process of corruption, decay, the final stage is death. And now man is sentenced to returning back to the earth from which he came. And of course, that is exactly what happens. We die and we go back into the earth. Our bodies, over a process of time, decompose and go back into the dust. But all that is wrong, all that is hurtful, all that is painful, all that is deadly, you know, all of the negative from human behavior toward one another to just what we see in the creation itself, it's all related back to the same thing. You know, two great universally asked questions are, why is man seemingly more inclined toward evil than he is toward good? And why do all people die? And the philosophers, right down to the very most current philosopher, no one has ever really been able to give a conclusive answer to either one of those questions. The Bible gives an absolute, clear-cut, conclusive answer that men are more inclined toward evil because they are born into sin, and that everybody dies because sin has brought about death. You know, the Bible really does have the best answer. It's a simple answer, and therefore some people reject it because they feel it's too simple. Well, that's too easy. Why does it have to be any more complicated than that? And when you get into the realm of philosophy, you find very complicated arguments, but at the end, they don't mean anything. They don't really say anything. They don't take you anywhere. They don't answer any questions. That's why many modern philosophers, that's why they have despaired of ever finding an answer to anything and just sort of given up and said, nothing means anything. But the Bible gives us this clear statement regarding why things are the way they are. And I believe that when we talk to people, and when people are puzzled or troubled or upset over the current state of affairs in regard to suffering, in regard to catastrophe, in regard to disease and all of those things, I believe the first thing we should let them know when we start a conversation with them is this is not the way it was intended to be, and this is not the way it originally was. And then explain to them why things are the way they are. But of course, then we have the other side of it, which is God has done something about it, and he's going to ultimately reverse this whole process. The world is a world full of suffering. And again, I have to say that comparatively to the rest of the world, we just don't know a whole lot about suffering. I mean, you know, we think we're suffering, but are we really suffering in compared to how most people today still experience life in this world and what people have experienced throughout most of history? Augustine, back in around 400 AD, so 1600 plus years ago, he was commenting on the result of the curse of sin upon the world and upon men. He said, "Who can describe, who can conceive the number and severity of the punishments that afflict the human race? Pains which are not only the accompaniment of the wickedness of godless men, but are part of the human condition and the common misery. What fear and what grief are caused by bereavement and mourning, by losses and condemnations, by fraud and falsehood, by false suspicions, and all the crimes and wicked deeds of other men. For at their hands we suffer robbery, captivity, chains, imprisonment, exile, torture, mutilation, loss of sight, the violations of chastity to satisfy the lust of the oppressor, and many other dreadful evils. What numberless casualties threaten our bodies from without? Extremes of heat and cold, storms, floods, inundations, lightning, thunder, hail, earthquakes, houses falling, or from the stumbling or vice of horses, from the countless poisons and fruits, water, air, animals, from the painful or even deadly bites of wild beasts. What disasters are suffered by those who travel by land or sea? What man can go out of his own house without being exposed on all hands to unforeseen accidents? Returning home sound and limb, he slips, breaks his leg, and never recovers. What can seem safer than a man sitting in his chair? Eli the priest fell from his and broke his neck." But here's the thing that I find interesting. Augustine is describing his day 1600 years ago. But did you know you can go to all kinds of places in the world today and find it just exactly as Augustine described it? Now, again, some of this stuff is for us obviously sounds a bit foreign. But again, it's because, as I said earlier, we've had a tremendous influence upon our culture from Christianity, and a lot of the things that we take for granted, a lot of the things that the atheists take for granted, a lot of the things that they just assume that, well, we do this because, you know, we're good people, or we're better people, or we're smarter people. No, if you trace it back far enough, the reason we do this is because of the Christian influence that came in at a certain point. So many of the things that we look at and say, well, this is, you know, a civilized culture versus that one's uncivilized, it's the way it is because of the influence of the gospel. But when you take the gospel out of the picture and you go back to the depravity of man and allow the depravity of man to just, begin to manifest itself more and more and more, you end up with a situation like Augustine is describing. And even though we're in the 21st century, these kinds of things are still quite common in many places.
We'll return with more of our study through the book of Genesis in our next lesson as Pastor Brian continues with part two of Cursed is the Earth. But right now I'd like to remind you that if you missed any part of this study, or perhaps you'd like to review it again at a more convenient time, you can do so by simply calling us toll-free at 1-800-733-6443 and request the message entitled Cursed is the Earth. Or if you prefer, simply refer to it by resource number BT0016. Once again, our toll-free number is 1-800-733-6443. And for those of you that prefer to write, you can address your correspondence to Back to Basics, P.O. Box 8000, Costa Mesa, California, 92628. And when writing or calling, be sure to ask for a free catalog of available resources from Back to Basics, and please include the call letters of this station with your correspondence. You're also invited to visit our website at backtobasicsradio.com, where you can listen to archived messages by Pastor Brian or subscribe to our podcasts. Once again, that's backtobasicsradio.com.
So turn up your radio.
Back to Basics is sponsored by Calvary Chapel of Costa Mesa, California.